In the Madison Police Department podcast, we promote safety by providing information on current crime trends in the capital city. In addition, we give listeners a behind-the-badge look at community-based, problem-solving policing done the Madison way. You will hear from passionate MPD subject matter experts, people we like to call guardians. These men and women are dedicated to keeping Madison a great place to live, learn, and play.
Well, greetings and welcome to the Madison Police Department podcast, where we like to provide listeners with in-depth analysis regarding our community-based, problem-oriented policing strategies. Today, we're going to dive into staffing limitations due to tight budget constraints that can impact our mission and public safety. Joining in the conversation is Acting Chief Vic Wall, and our special podcast guest is MPD Finance Manager Teague Maurer. Welcome to you both.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Joel.
Chief, where are we in terms of our authorized strength, and how much does our budget impact where you'd like to be in terms of our number of officers?
Well, we have a set number of authorized positions that we can hire to within the budget. That's set every year. This year, our authorized strength for sworn personnel is 483, but that constrains how many we can hire when we go through our hiring process and we start our academy. That's sort of the baseline that we work off of. And every year as we go through the budget process, typically we'll, put forth requests for additional staffing, additional positions across both our commissioned and non-commissioned parts of the department, and see whether we can get those built into our budget. But however that budget works out and whatever those limitations are restricts how many people we can hire and ultimately what level of service we can provide.
And I know, Teague, when people hear the budget for the police department, which I think is the largest in the city, I mean, we're talking $82 million budget. And I think it's important for people to understand where is that money going and how much discretion is there out there. And I think you've told me that some 90% is for salaries and fringe benefits. It's really locked in.
That's exactly right. So approximately 90% of the police budget is comprised of those personnel kind of fixed costs. So that would be all the salaries as well as associated fringe benefits. And once you take off the top other interdepartmental charges and grant transfers, we're really left with about 5% out of that whole $82 million that is dedicated to supplies and services. Then within that, it breaks down even further with a pretty large array of fixed costs or costs that are really necessary for running a law enforcement operation. So there are a lot of costs within our budget that are ongoing obligations, I think, that might surprise people. Mm-hmm. So a couple examples of that, within that supplies and services budget, about 20% of that right off the bat goes to actually pay rent for our tenancy within the city-county building, as well as our citywide towing contract.
So I think, let's stop there for a second, because I don't know that police or people understand that the Central District Police Department is in the city-county building, which is owned by the county. And so as a police department, we've been paying rent since, the 1950s or whenever this building was built. Is that the way it works?
That's right. I think it was 1955 or 56 when this building was built, and it's a significant amount of rent that we pay every year, and it's an older building with all the limitations that go along with that. So it's
we chuckle because you can't really drink the water down at the police department. We have bottled water brought in, and that's the truth. So
yes, yeah. Unfortunately.
Yeah. Has there ever been discussion, as we're talking about budgets, of having the city's own building? I mean, we're up here where our folks that are helping us with the podcast are also paying rent. They're a city agency. But why, maybe this is a question neither of you can answer, but I'm just curious, why do all these city agencies, why are they in a county building paying the county rent when we could have our own building perhaps?
Well, I don't know I can't speak to the origin of how we ended up here, because that predates my start with the department. But I think a couple things are at play. Certainly in terms of the police department, I know when I started, the top floors of this building housed part of the jail. Mm-hmm. And when I started, that was all there was for the jail. There wasn't a public safety building. And there's certainly efficiencies and convenience with the department being in the same building as the jail. And when I started, the district attorney's office and all of the circuit courts were in the same building.
In the coroner's office.
In the coroner's office. So there were certainly efficiencies to having all that stuff together.
In the same building. And then we've decentralized.
We've decentralized. The courts have moved out. The district attorney's moved out.
The coroner's now the medical examiner, and they've moved out.
They've moved out.
And we're still here.
And we're still here. you know, I think probably the driving thing, of course, is cost. Is in addition to MPD, there's a lot of other city agencies that work out of this building. And
right.
To the notion to find property somewhere downtown where you could construct something that would have everything, the capacity for all those units. And certainly for a police department, there's a number of specific unique things that we need where you couldn't necessarily just move into a pre-existing office building. And there is benefit to being close to the public safety building and close to the courthouse. But ultimately, I think, you know, Dane County is building a new expansion to the public safety building, and their plan is to close the 6th and 7th floor jail.
The jail. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe when that happens, there might be some impetus to rethink how we use this building and what other options are out there, because it is it leaves much to be desired for everybody who works in it.
And speaking on behalf of Teague, I think I could say that we'd like to have a lake view, maybe you know, somewhere down near the Elks Club or something like that. That would be a nice spot to have the police department. So, and Teague, I rudely interrupted you, but I thought it was interesting for people to understand that we're actually paying rent, and that's a lot of, I think that's one of the larger portions of this piece of the pie you're talking about.
It absolutely is. So within the supplies and services, it does consume about 20% of the budget. I think the rent alone is well over $500,000. And a couple other, you know, miscellaneous charges that we're responsible for as a department that are just expected to be absorbed within the budget would be jail fees. We actually pay the jail whenever our officers book someone into the jail on only municipal charges. Last year, I think that was about $25,000. You know, we have a variety of computer systems and licenses that are necessary for investigations and law enforcement operations.
And you have to pay those license fees every year.
Exactly, and of course, they're always going up. We have a variety of contractually required expenses associated with the officers' equipment and uniforms.
You know, you had mentioned that to me when we were doing kind of a pre-podcast talk yesterday, that for each officer, and I found this interesting, it's about a $10,000 expense to get them up and running. If you could explain that a little bit.
Right. So I think sometimes at the city level, when there are discussions about staffing numbers and, you know, if officers should be considered to be added to the department, why is a police officer so expensive in terms of the supplies and services? Because most, the average civilian position, you know, you might think of typical office supplies or a computer, something that might be associated with that position. But it's true. To add a truly new officer, it is over $10,000 to fully equip them with, you know, their uniform items, their crowd control gear, radio, work supplies, their phone. There are a variety of costs that are all kind of embedded within that $10,000. So it's definitely an investment, but a very important one.
And when you add multiple officers, you also have to factor in vehicles, because one of the problems we've had over the years is having a insufficient fleet size, where during peak times you'll have officers in the district stations who don't have a car. And so we've been working to try to make sure our fleet size is adequate, but if we add officers, you have to equip them individually, but you also have to make sure we have enough vehicles for them to go out and do their jobs.
You know, and I think as we talk about a lot of these things in the community, I mean, I get a lot of calls, being the public information officer, and I kind of gauge interest. And one of those things that I think that people are interested in is body-worn cameras. And, you know, that's something that I think our officers are in support of having that, and this is something that I think people need to understand, that the Common Council would have to authorize the purchase of these things. And it would be very expensive to outfit a police department of our size with body-worn cameras, and again, adding on to these budget items. Do you have any sense of that, Chief, in terms of...
Well, I think we haven't done a recent estimate of what it would cost, but I think the number that we had come up with a few years ago was about $1 million for just the infrastructure for the cameras, the server space. But the other piece of that is there is an ongoing cost, because we would need to add a staff person just to handle the mechanics and the logistics of all those video files and the records requests and the discovery requests to navigate all that. Now, That being said, I do think it's certainly worthwhile and something the city mm-hmm. should do, because I think it benefits the department, it benefits the community, but it certainly has a price tag with it.
And speaking as a guy who at one time was a broadcast journalist, I can tell you that you need to have somebody to fix the cameras too, because they break.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, that's so I know as you're, and I, you know, I think it's interesting, Tig, that because I know prior to your arrival here, you were doing somewhat similar work at UW-Madison.
I was actually with the two-year campuses across the state, so at the UW colleges.
And what's that transition been like coming in and dealing with a law enforcement budget? And as I say that, and this is something I'd like both of you to chime in on, and Tegan and I talked about this, but there are so many unexpected expenses in terms of homicides or unexpected protests, or as we're heading into this next year, people who want to be president visiting Madison, and all of these things are very intensive when it comes to staffing.
That's exactly right. As far as the transition, I think I came from higher education and am now working, you know, in another area of the public sector, which is law enforcement. And as far as what the difference has been, I would say that education and law enforcement are both areas that, you know, lead to a very engaging community discussion. And those are both topics that folks have a lot of interest in. So, you know, whether it's working with legislators on, you know, some sort of initiative that they have, or potentially talking with alders about ideas they'd like to implement, it's all part of the larger big picture of trying to help folks figure out the best way to maximize and leverage resources in service of that community. So that piece of the transition has been fairly smooth.
Mm-hmm. And then I was asking about just the unexpected costs, which I would think are different when you're trying to budget for law enforcement.
That's exactly right. And one of the definite challenges, I think, with law enforcement in particular is that those things come up and there isn't a corresponding budget adjustment when a homicide occurs, or, you know, there's a string of auto thefts or something. So, you know, we hear about that a lot sometimes with our overtime correlation, but a lot of that is largely outside of our control mm-hmm. and very much demand driven.
And any thoughts on that yourself, Chief, in terms of trying to talk with alders, the mayor and others when, you know, we have a more than our normal share, if you will, of homicides or protests, and some of these things this sometimes come up that we, it's almost like a snowstorm for plows. We can't say when it's going to happen in many of these cases.
No, I agree, and I think you're right, certainly, that this year probably is likely to see some increases in those areas because of what I expect will be a lot of candidate visits during the election. But, you know, I think my message and perspective to the mayor and our alders has always been, you know, we have to do our job and do it right. And, you know, the cost is just going to be what it is. But we can't cut corners on how we're going to deliver service or how we're going to work to ensure public safety. And that's not a message that has been, you know, received mm-hmm. any pushback or anything. But I think our elected officials understand the realities of what we do and how much of it can be out of our control.
And speaking of visiting candidates, I think there's some thought out there that you build a campaign and they pay us back. Since I've been in this position as the public information officer over years, I think these are decisions that are potentially made in the mayor's office, but it seems to me that not many, if any, of these campaigns actually end up paying back for municipal services. I don't know if I'm correct on this or not, but I know that's something that I hear about, again, where I sit in the PIO office.
Well, historically, it's been very hit and miss and inconsistent from the city's perspective as to whether we are going to seek reimbursement for costs, and not just police costs, but other city agencies right. incur costs when we have candidate visits. Clearly, Mayor Rhodes-Conway has indicated that she wants us meaning the city, to bill mm-hmm. for any visits this year, and to do it consistently, and to have all city agencies send those bills after the visits. Now, I'm not optimistic that any of those will be paid, but I think as a matter of consistency and policy, we'll mm-hmm. You know, we're going to plan for the visit the way we need to and staff it the way we need to ensure it goes down safely. And so the cost and the billing piece of it won't impact our decision making. And we'll let the rest of the city deal with the billing process. Mm-hmm.
And what does that do for you, Teague, in terms of your workload? Is this stuff that you have to crunch as well in terms of when we have one of these visits?
It is. The billing would be in terms of, you know, aggregating the data and putting together a bill, that's something that we would put together within our department and then, you know, forward that on. But it's not, you know, it's definitely variable depending on the number of visits. Mm-hmm. At this point, I think it's speculation. We're not quite sure what the rest of the year might hold.
And I know I get questions from reporters each time we have some type of high or level dignitary visit, is how much of that cost the police department? And I've also learned over time that when I go to talk with Teague and the woman who had the job prior to Teague's arrival, that we really don't know, because sometimes there are police officers who are working their normal shifts. Sometimes police officers who are going to work overtime take that as time off and not as pay. So maybe you could explain a little bit, how do you determine even what those costs are going to be in terms of more than what was budgeted or what the regular salaries are?
Sure. So as Chief Wall was alluding to, we certainly make a staffing decision about what is operationally the right approach for addressing that type of event. And then after the fact, depending on the method of staffing selected, whether it's folks potentially helping out during the course of their regular day or maybe coming in especially just on overtime to fill some of those assignments, the way that we track that definitely differs. So depending on the scope and the complexity of the event, it might be a little bit more complicated to put those costs together.
And I know sometimes it takes time, because I know a lot of times after a dignitary has left, somebody wants that number on the Monday morning after a Saturday event or something. I say, well, it's going to be a while until we actually have it, because we don't know if these officers are putting in for time off or for money.
That's exactly right. We certainly appreciate the questions when they come in, but just recognize that we do have to wait for those expenses to post in our payroll system, and that can take a few weeks.
And Chief, I know that you know, you're here with us hopefully for a long time, but not as acting chief forever, although we don't know the exact timeline of this process as to when the PFC, the Police Fire Commission, is going to be actually bringing in a new permanent chief. But what would you like to have in place in terms of budgetary items and things so that there's a smooth transition? Is that something that you're thinking about at all in terms of things that you'd like to see purchased or things that we need to have so that this next chief coming in has really got things up to snuff, in your opinion?
Well, certainly on the staffing side of things, I think it's important for us to just keep making forward progress in terms of increasing our staffing. We have a lot of data, a lot of analysis that demonstrates to me that our workload is continuing to increase and that we don't have the personnel to keep up with it. The city's growing, the population is growing, it's growing geographically, and there's more and more demands put on our officers and our detectives and really all of our personnel. And so I would like to see us to keep moving forward, because my concern is that if we don't continue making progress on our staffing, we'll get to a point where we just can't deliver the service that we're able to currently, and we're going to have to make some very significant cuts in terms of the service that we provide, and that's something that our community, I think, will not be satisfied with, because I think the residents of Madison expect a high level of service from us, as they should, but that comes at a cost. And certainly we have some large capital projects that we're looking at. You know, we have five district stations out there in addition to the city-county building here. Mm-hmm. And one of them, the oldest one up on the north side, is just grossly undersized and just well beyond capacity. And so I think a priority and something I would like to have in place is to secure funding for us to move forward with a new facility to replace that one, and something that's adequately sized for what we need up there.
And I know one of the other fairly large items on the horizon is the town of Madison is going to be no more, and I believe we're going to take over a pretty good chunk of what is now the town of Madison, which I would think is going to also have a fairly significant impact on the services we need to provide and the budget.
Correct, and we've been putting in a lot of work, as have other city agencies, in anticipation of that, and we've put forth an estimate on what staffing increases we think we need to accept that extra population, that extra space, that extra workload, but certainly those things will have to work through the city budget process here in the next 2 years.
And so is it 2 years out now? Is that
it's October of 2022 is the absolute end. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if some things or some services have to start being provided by the city before then, just because of the mechanics of how that dissolution is going to take place and some of the details with it. So no later than then, but possibly sooner.
And Teague, I hope you are appreciative of the challenge and up for the challenge as we talk about all these things.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. And I think, you know, there was some thought, well, talking about budget might not be too exciting, but I think it is. I think there's it's good for people to understand, you know, how their tax dollars are being spent and the needs that are out there and really our mission to provide top-notch, you know, police services that people have come to expect. So thank you, Chief.
Thanks, Joel.
I'm Joel Despain, and we appreciate having you as a listener.